Next Wednesday is the 4th of July, Independence Day, the day that celebrates the birth of our country. I happen to think it's one of the most significant holidays on the calendar, a reminder of how we came to be and the odds that were overcome and the sacrifices that were made for that to happen. I think enough of it that it's been a frequent annual topic of this program, and I'm going to go in that direction again this year. But fear not, while the general topic, independence, will be consistent, the overall content of today's program is wholly new. To be clear from the outset, for those of you that might have slept through portions of your high school history class, and shame on you if you did, that's what math class is for. What Wednesday will specifically commemorate is the day the Continental Congress formally adopted the Declaration of Independence, our letter to King George III of England, announcing to him our intentions to shake off the shackles of British rule and oppression, and to instead stand up and govern ourselves. I think it's an okay thing to have certain topics, this being one, be shared on something of a regular basis. I've always thought that about Independence Day because, in my humble opinion, we are so bombarded by what's wrong through social media and sensationalist reporting that we forget what's right or the good things about from where we started. We are closing in on 2.5 centuries, this year it's 242 years to be exact, since our forefathers across 13 colonies took a stand against a colossal foe. They chose instead a path of heavy sacrifice overlaid with incredible vision that brought forth our country and gave us the freedoms that so many folks stand on to be able to squabble over any number of issues today. Well, for just a few minutes today, let's focus on the fact that we live in a country of innumerable freedoms and some of the people and events that gave us those freedoms. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. The American colonies defeating Great Britain to achieve independence was one of the greatest upsets in recorded history. For those of you who are sports fans, think of the Miracle on Ice, the real 1950s Indiana team that inspired the movie Hoosiers, Villanova over Georgetown back in the 1980s, and Buster Douglas sending Iron Mike Tyson to the canvas. Yeah, something of all those rolled up into one and multiplied by a really large number. It was a stunning victory for the colonies and an even more stunning defeat for Britain, then the world's greatest, most powerful nation. Certainly Britain's mind was that the colonies were not only incapable of winning, but that they'd not even put up much of a challenge. The Americans didn't have a standing army or navy, and darned few experienced officers of any sort. Britain's was a professional army, the world's best, and they had the world's greatest navy as well. The colonies were seen as far from united. There was often dissent from one to the next, and cooperation was a hit-and-miss thing. Also, British officers held a much less than favorable opinion of American soldiers from earlier engagements such as the French and Indian War. One British general, after that conflict, described America's soldiers as cowardly dogs. An appointed governor said that the colonists were a poor species of fighting man. The odds were hugely stacked against us. So, what were some of the events that allowed such a thing to happen? Let's examine a few events, a few battles, a few people that might have a ring of familiarity to them from history classes in your past. One of my favorite stories from the Revolutionary War, and one that's fairly well known thanks to the famous painting by Emanuel Lutzi, was Washington's crossing of the Delaware River on Christmas night in 1776. The battle itself, in the grand scheme of the war, is considered a bit of a minor one, but it was one that Washington badly needed. To set the stage, Washington's troops had suffered several serious losses and morale was sagging badly. The troops were in not so great shape anyway, and winter had set in with a vengeance. The goal of the crossing was to attempt to take control of Trenton, New Jersey, which was, at the time, under the control of a strong, if a bit overconfident, Hessian force of 1,400 soldiers. The hope was that the Hessians would be sleeping off the celebration of Christmas and not at the peak of their game. In spite of a whole host of obstacles, the attack worked. As the soldiers stood on the far bank awaiting transport across an ice-choked river, a severe storm descended on them that included strong winds, rain, ice, and snow. Temperatures hovered around 30 degrees. It was designed to be a three-prong attack, but only those soldiers with Washington made it across. The other two groups were unable to get across due to the weather. As such, the battle was undertaken with a fraction of the planned manpower. After crossing 300 yards of cold, icy river, the soldiers hiked 4 hours to get to Trenton, arriving in the hours before dawn. The battle was over quickly, as the Hessians didn't believe an attack was imminent, and they weren't prepared. Only 3 Americans died. Over 1,000 Hessians were taken as prisoners. Again, while it's not seen, historically, as a major battle, the effects of the victory were immediate. It had a pronounced effect on the troops' morale. Soldiers celebrated in the knowledge that, yes, they could achieve victory. Also, Washington's role as a leader was secured, and Congress gained renewed enthusiasm for continuing the fight against Britain. Frankly, I'd think this is a story that we as Alaskans can get behind. There was a job to do, in the winter, and it got done, without any real regard for the weather. Another surprise battle, out on what was considered the Northwest frontier at the time, what we call the upper Midwestern states today, was when General George Rogers Clark led his troop on a nighttime raid to try and take a key British fort called Kaskaskia. They had marched 6 days to get there and had gone without food for the last 2. Approaching the fort on the night of July 4th, of all dates, they discovered the British and others indulged in a celebration, complete with singing and dancing. No one was guarding the fort. Clark's troops went into the fort and took control without firing a shot. One of the reasons I've always enjoyed stories about this so-called battle is something Clark supposedly said when he stepped into the dance hall and the British realized he was there. As people started to jump to attention, Clark reportedly told them to go back to their dancing, but to realize that they danced under an American flag, not a British one. Oh, and Clark had a brother who went on to something of a level of fame of his own, William Clark, of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. One quote that a lot of folks might remember belongs to John Paul Jones, a Scottish sailor who came to America as a cabin boy when he was young. He became an able-bodied seaman and eventually a captain, and by the outset of the war, a senior lieutenant in the all-new Continental Navy. He proved to be a very capable naval commander and distinguished himself in actions up and down the Atlantic coast. What he is most remembered for is a conflict off the coast of England. At the command of the U.S. ship Bonhom Richard, he engaged in battle with 2 British warships, the Serapis and the Countess of Scarborough. Early on, his ship was badly damaged, and Richard Pearson, the captain of the Serapis, asked Jones if he had struck his colors, a naval thing meaning, "Are you ready to surrender?" Jones was a proud, defiant fellow, and from his disabled ship he replied, "I have not yet begun to fight." 3 more hard hours of fighting later, and the Serapis and the Countess of Scarborough surrendered to him. After the victory, the Americans transferred to the Serapis from the Bonhom Richard, which was so badly damaged that it could not be repaired, and it sank the next day. That quote is one of the more famous ones to have emerged from the Revolutionary War, and a lot of folks still know it today, even if they're sketchy on the details surrounding it. Of course, the nexus of what Wednesday will be is still the dated document that represents our birth as a nation, the Declaration of Independence. Really, the Declaration of Independence was nothing more than a formal letter to the King of England outlining to him why we chose to pull away and form our own country. It sets down why we felt such a decision was necessary, the charges against England that compelled it, and detailed, to some degree, our future intentions as a newly formed nation. The Declaration was drafted by then 33-year-old Thomas Jefferson between June 11th and June 28th, 1776, and edited by some of his most trusted colleagues, to include John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. This letter is considered one of our nation's most cherished symbols of liberty, and Jefferson's words were well chosen, and they expressed the convictions in the minds and hearts of the American people he represented. During some past years, I have read many of the parts of the first few paragraphs, as well as the ending to the Declaration of Independence. I did not allow time to do that today, though I'd strongly urge you, if it's not fresh in your mind, to take a few minutes over the weekend or on the 4th to Google up a solid historical online site and read through it. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Portions of it give me actual goosebumps. To consider that our forefathers, with so much to lose in the face of such a great and powerful opponent, agreed to cast their lots together and do what they felt was right while standing together. Obviously, it wasn't as easy as all that, the simple writing of a letter. But it was a start, from which eventually came, 8 hard-fought years later, great triumph. For many people, Wednesday will be a day off from work. It's a tradition across our country to spend time with friends and family, eat a lot of food, and shoot off firecrackers and fireworks. Those are all good things to do. But do take a moment to remember why it is you have the extra time off. Yeah, we seemingly have a lot of problems in our country today, but try to remember that it was founded on a wonderful set of principles and done for good reasons. That foundation is still there, and it gives me pride to be able to remember the efforts that brought it about and provides me with the freedoms that I enjoy today. Oh, and if you're looking for that tenuous tie to the outdoors that sometimes comes with these episodes, consider that many of our founding fathers, and the men and women who fought for our freedom, well, the outdoors was foundational to their daily lives. Washington, for example, liked to fish and enjoyed fox hunting. So there is that. Have a safe and enjoyable Independence Day, everyone. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.